information from around the nation. The 411 right here on 88.1 FM WFSK at historic Fisk University.
No one says it like Dr. Kwame, okay? Let's not get it twisted, Nashville. Thank you, Dr. Kwame. They're busy. The Jubilee Singers will be getting back from Carnegie Hall. Must be nice. Your children have such fun as being a Jubilee.
Yes, they do.
I'm just saying, these trips and things. Now this stuff is back to a slight case of normalcy. We're easing ever so slightly back to normal. So I know it was time to get a COVID-19 update, information update. And I have to turn to my trusted friends at the Metro Nashville Public Health Department, who I have been talking to a bunch of times over the 2 years, a bunch. This is the first time I see them together in here with me. I feel so safe right now. I'm so happy. And we almost had to do name tags, you know, visitor tags. And what's your name, please, Stan? We have not seen each other in such a long time. So I feel progress has been made. And Dr. Gill, how many countless interviews did you do with us over those 2 years of time?
Not sure, but a lot.
A bunch, I can tell you. And it is just so good to see you moving closer.
It's great to see you, too.
Thank you. And Rachel Franklin.
Good afternoon.
As well. You all have just been so working tirelessly to dispatch information around the region, the city of Nashville, to keep us up to the minute, up to the second, on everything COVID-19, testing, vaccinations, signs, symptoms, everything. Now, do we get to do a collective exhale yet, Dr. Gill?
Not quite yet, but it's getting close.
Okay. Oh, I was so hoping, because I can't wait to do. And I think everybody's at that point, don't you?
I do. I think so. Everybody's very fatigued by this.
And what about you professionally? Are you up? I know you're still up for the challenge, but 2 years in.
2 years in is a lot, but I think each of us at the health department went through periods of time when we were up and when we were down, but I feel like we're doing well, and so I'm doing up. I'm up right now.
Excellent. What about you, Rachel?
I agree. Knowing that the case number is currently down is motivating to our employees, and it keeps them going. I mm-hmm. think if it was as bad as it has been, there would be a lot more burnout. But right now, people are feeling good about what we've done and
okay.
where we're going. So.
Okay. Especially when you hit the 2-year mark. And, you know, we're on the other side of, you know, dispatching the information and having to, you know, I feel like at night in my dreams, I have 2491 Murfreesboro Road. I have at the corner 28, I have all that carved in my head. So it just rolls off, you know, the top and, you know, where the sites were for testing and all that and participating in them myself. It was, the community was on high alert for the entire 2 years, wasn't it, Dr. Gill?
Yeah, they've been on high alert. You know, our staff's put a lot of time in. Mm-hmm. They've done a great job, and I will echo what Rachel said, that, you know, I think seeing the numbers down is very heartening for all of us.
Well, and you said, Rachel, the numbers are down. From where to where they are now? Where? Give us some ideas of the distance.
So I'll let Dr. Wright get into the specifics, but we have ups and downs based on the different variants.
Oh,
so
good.
Based on the first Omicron wave, where we were seeing a couple of hundred of cases a day, 200-300 cases a day, now we're down to less than 30 cases a day.
Yeah.
So it's drastic.
Yeah. You know, our last peak of Omicron really put us up quite high. At that point, we were seeing 284, 85 new cases a day per 100,000 people. So thousands a day of new cases. Mm-hmm. We're down to under 5 new cases a day per 100,000 right now.
That's
so
huge.
So about 35 a day.
Okay. Now, so for all of us that have been triple vaccinated, can we feel good about what we've done?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank
Absolutely.
You. Us mask-wearing, triple-vaccinated, hand-sanitizing, 6 feet apart people. You all know who you are. You've been faithful over a few things. And so that has paid off, right, Dr. Gill?
That has significantly improved, and protected a lot of people.
Now, I want to talk with both of you about, it seems like every couple of days or every couple of weeks, there's discussion about a new variant. And is it BA2? Is that what it is? Okay. Should we be as alarmed as we've been with Omicron and Delta and from the beginning? Or if you're at a certain point, like maybe 2 vaccinations shots in or 3, can you say the difference and what that would mean to you, Dr. Gill?
Sure. So, yes, it's important to be vaccinated. Those people that the vaccine works very well against the Omicron. And the new BA2 is just a subset of that Omicron. It, because of where the change in the structure is, it's more infectious, but it doesn't seem to be any more severe. And getting fully vaccinated with a booster reduces your risk significantly. If you've just had 2 doses, you have about a 70% chance of still getting Omicron, but a very low chance of being hospitalized or being very sick, dying. With the booster, it cuts that risk in half. So you're only about 30% likely to get infected. And the vaccine's doing what it's supposed to be, which is it's not supposed to completely keep you from getting sick. It's supposed to keep you from being very ill, being hospitalized, dying.
Well, I'm feeling good about it. I'm ready for number 4. Y'all need me to go for 4?
That may be coming.
Okay, I am not playing. You all can play if you want to. When I heard the news about there might have to be a 4th vaccination, I don't know how people felt, but I was like, sign me up. And how do you all feel about that since you've done, the drive-through clinics and people have been, had to be talked in to the first 1 or 2 or 3?
I think we'll continue to follow CDC recommendations. Right now, there's no current recommendation for a 4th shot.
Okay.
But if there is, we'll make sure that the citizens of Davidson County will have access to that.
Okay.
Through our strike teams and our community assessment centers, absolutely.
Okay. How important to the progress that you all have made inside the Metro Health Department has Meharry Medical College and the work that they have done with you been?
Wonderful partners. I'll let Dr. Wright talk, but I have to say
he had that glow on his face. Tell
great
us, Doc.
Partners.
They have been great partners. Without their help, we would not have been able to serve the city in any manner to the degree that we have. And
almost
they have
2 million PCR tests
that
conducted.
That is amazing.
In the last 2 years with the help of Meharry.
That is, get the applause, okay. Meharry Medical College staff, that's for y'all. Turn it up, explain it again. That's for y'all. 2 million, are you kidding? And I know they hit me in my arm 3 times. Oh my gosh, that is so incredible.
And they're continuing to do it, and they do it every day. They are very friendly, nice, just great people to work with, and just represent the community in a very great manner.
Well, whoever thought of that, it was a good idea.
Yes.
It really was.
I agree.
And I don't know who it was, and I don't want to give credit because I don't know, but thank the Lord that it was in place. And that's the purpose of having Mary Medical College right there. And I see that as a triple win because of the impacts on the communities of color and also in the proximity to educational institutions where you all are located downtown. It was just a win-win, right, Dr.
Absolutely. Hill? Win-win for all of us.
Yeah. And I'm grateful for that, and I hope the community is as well and continues to support the fine work that they are doing there and the community that were galvanized to volunteer. You know, a couple of people said, "Shan K, is that you?" I'm like, "No, I can't even come." You know, I had the mask on. I was trying to sneak in and get quiet and come up in here. Those people knew me. I was like, "Oh, no." I started laughing. It's all over. But anyway, there have been just some really good things that people have said. And I love the drive-thru. There's something really, really cool about that.
Oh, it's so efficient and handy, especially during a pandemic where you don't want to have to gather with a big group of people. So it's really worked great.
Yeah. Have you all had that feedback session yet where you're looking, I know we're not through it, but what was good and what, have you had that?
We haven't yet. We're in the process of getting ready to do our after-action report.
Okay.
And
we
will look at all of those
things. Is the community going to have an input into that?
I expect that they will,
okay,
yes.
Yeah.
Certainly all of our partners.
Okay. Because I would think that the community should have something to input into it because they're the ones that went through the experiences. And I have a senior citizen that I love dearly, and I do whatever I can as an extension of her family. And I took her for all the tests and all the vaccinations, so I got to experience different places and things and conditions. And I know I had some observations from my own experiences and with dealing with that age group that I hope you all do ask for feedback.
We welcome all feedback in real time because we're constantly improving our operations. And yes, we have folks that reach out all the time about their experiences. Most of them are very positive, I will say.
Yeah, this is positive.
But absolutely, Sharon Kay, if you have a don't wait for an after-action report, because we want to be able to implement those if we can now.
Well, I see some advances that you've made, and I know at the front end of a pandemic, it's like everybody's hair on fire. I get it, because we just were after the tornado, so we had double things going on, and then the trauma that brought to the region. So everybody's hair was on fire, and I take that into account. But I was talking with her about a couple things, and once I took her to the drive-thru, she said to me, "They should have had me to drive-thru at the very beginning." Then and I was like, I know, because the convenience of it, you know, yeah. And I said, "Well, they had to work the plan out," and I just know that the senior that I dealt with through all of this, through all her tests and shots and the whole nine. That's the highlight of her life. She started rolling her sleeve up two or three blocks before we got to. I'm like, "You ready, aren't you?" "Yes, I am." "Okay." I would go get it done, then I call her and give her a full report so she would feel comfortable. But it was, like, important for us in the media to do that.
Sure. Yeah,
absolutely.
And so I felt comfortable in doing it. And it was also good for us to get the updates. I told the mayor this as well. Well, when you all were doing the weeklies, the dailies, that was very important for the community to feel plugged in. Now that we're 2 years in, are we more accustomed to going, knowing where to go, signs and symptoms, who to ask, what to do? Are we more calm about getting vaccinated now versus the anxiety attack of a year ago, Dr. Gill?
I think we are, although we still get questions about where do I go, how do I get, and we are answering those questions, you know, routinely, daily. Obviously, we have the two drive-thrus currently where you can be tested and or get a vaccine. We've done a number of different vaccine events, including the one at Nissan Stadium where we gave over 10,000 vaccines early. We've taken a lot of the things that we learned initially and improved on those, as Rachel said. And so we continue to make improvements, but I think people are more comfortable, at least with understanding what's going on. We'll continue to work with the community to let them know when there are new items that they need to be aware of, such as the BA2.
Or the fourth vaccine.
Or the fourth vaccine, if it becomes available.
Okay.
So those
are you getting those questions already?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what kind of things are folks sharing with you all?
I think they're like you. They'd like to get, a lot of them would like to get the fourth dose. When do I get it? I think it's going to be more like, at least initially, it appears it'll be more like the flu where you get it maybe in the fall. We are waiting for the CDC and the FDA to kind of put together and look at the literature.
Okay, excellent. And in the time that we have, the 10-plus minutes that we have left, this was the quickest time I've ever seen. We got about 10 or 15 minutes left.
Wow, that is fast.
That was like, boom. I said, next time I'm going to give you all more time because I got a lot of questions. And I want to let the audience know if you have a question or comment today. Rachel Franklin and Dr. Gil Wright from the Metro Health Department are here giving us a COVID-related issues update, as well as they'll take your questions. And this is part one, because when I rescheduled them, I told them like 30 seconds before we started, I'm going to have y'all back on part two, that we'll spend a little bit more time to make sure everybody's good and clear. Questions or comments, 615-329-8810. Let's take a time out, get the traffic report, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. Traffic still moving right now in the South Loop, the West Loop. It's going to get really busy in the next 15, 20 minutes on 65 and through Madison, headed towards Goodlettsville. This traffic report brought to you by Princess Hot Chicken. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Support for WFSK comes from the United Way of Greater Nashville. Don't pay to have your taxes filed. United Way's Vita-Free Tax Prep Program can help. Visit UnitedWayFileFree.com or call 211 to have your taxes filed in person or virtually by IRS certified preparers. That's UnitedWayFileFree.com or 211. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, in Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Just skated in just on time. I mean, literally, just sat out. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. We thank you so very much for supporting What's the 411. We're talking getting a COVID
related issues update today with Rachel Franklin and Dr. Gill of the Metro Health Department. And Dr. Gill, right, he has a last name. He has a last name.
He's like Madonna.
Yeah. This is one of the things that happens after you interview somebody repeatedly for 2 years.
That's right.
I just call you by your first name.
It
works. Dr. Gill. And we're talking about a variety of things as it relates to COVID issues. Now, we have Delta Omicron BA2. And Nashville, are we still dealing with Delta, or are we don't hear about it as much? Right.
Delta's pretty much gone now.
Oh, is it?
Uh-huh. Because in the worlds of viruses, whatever virus is the most infectious, whatever variant is, that's what you tend to see, because if I'm more infectious and I can get you infected, and my counterpart virus isn't as infectious, it can't get you infected. So it kind of dies out.
Okay.
And that's why we have moved through all of these different variants, is because each time we got a new major variant, it was more infectious than the last one. And the reason we're seeing BA2 become the predominant is it's a little more infectious than the original Omicron.
But we're still catching it in the same ways as all the rest.
Everything about it's the same except for its infectiousness.
So the use of masks still must be in existence.
Use of masks is important especially in communities where there's a higher number, or if you're with people that you don't know if they're vaccinated, mm-hmm. or have been around somebody, maybe you've traveled recently and come back. Right now, the big thing we're looking at and watching closely is our numbers over the next week to 10 days as we finish spring break.
Yes.
It typically takes about 2 weeks to kind of see a surge if we are going to.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's happening is that with the BA2, we follow Europe by about 2 to 3 weeks, and we've seen an increase in Europe because of it. So we're kind of waiting to see what happens there. We're holding our breaths. I don't think it'll be very bad, but we're kind of just holding breath to see.
Well, with the season coming up where people are going to want to get back together and do events and activities and et cetera, what are you feeling would be a comfort level?
Right. Well, the first thing is that a lot of the people are vaccinated, and, you know, the vaccine's very safe, effective. Go out and get it if you haven't. That keeps us more at a back to normal kind of thing. Working outside, having meetings out or groups outside.
Yeah.
If you think you might be infected, getting tested, especially if you're traveling and seeing somebody that may be at risk,
mm-hmm.
you know, had a lung or another organ transplant and is immune compromised,
mm-hmm.
or has underlying reasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
We want to protect those people. They don't get very good immunity, even if they've gotten, and for them, they could have gotten up to 4 shots. They just may not have very good immunity, and so you want to protect them. So get tested if you think you're sick before you're interacting with them.
Okay. Now, people are concerned about size and making plans for, events, parties, weddings, etc. Are we still dealing with the same size limitations, etc.?
No, all of our restrictions on gatherings have been lifted here in Davidson County.
Okay.
So, but we still encourage folks, like Dr. Wright said, you know, try to
be
outside.
They've been lifted so 100,000 people can cram on top of each other in downtown Israel.
Legally, yes.
Oh, really? That's interesting. All right, and then what?
Well, one thing that we're kind of transitioning to 2 years later, we are not, if someone has a positive test, the friends and family who they've been around may not be called by the health department anymore. So we're really relying on individuals to say, hey, I tested positive. Go back through what they've done over the last few days and tell people. And those folks need to be aware of any symptoms they may have. They don't need to stay home, but they just need to be aware of it, because if folks who don't feel good need to stay home, we still want that message out there.
And there's a reason we've transitioned. I mean, initially, it was day 5 to day 7. After you were exposed, mm-hmm. that most people became positive. Now it's day two or day three.
Right.
So if you get tested today, you're not going to get the results back maybe till tomorrow. If you were sick for a day or two before you went gotten tested, anybody that you're around probably is already positive. So it's not effective for us to be able to spread that and on call all those people. Whereas before we had some time to be able to do that.
Do you see the or feel the current administration sending out the testing and those kids have helped and the N95, KN95 mask has helped?
Right. I think having the testing available to be able to do it at home speaks to the fact that you can be sick with it and be positive within 2 or 3 days of exposure. So this is an easy way for you to have a test available to check and see, did I really become positive because I was with somebody last weekend?
Okay.
I think it's been a great tool in keeping people informed.
Really?
If they're sick or not, yes.
Okay. So give us the symptoms for when you should open up your government kit. All right, it's time to do the test. Give us something to work with.
Well, you know, it consistently has been pretty much the same things, although each variant's had a little bit of difference.
Right.
You know, the main thing is going to be runny nose, cough, shortness of breath, fevers if you get them.
Omicron has a scratchy throat.
Yeah.
More unique to Omicron is a scratchy throat. And then, of course, if someone tells you that they've tested positive and they were around you, that would be a great time to go ahead and take that test that you got from the mail.
Okay.
And kind of to that, when we had Delta, it seemed to have a more of a GI issue with it, more of a diarrhea issue with it.
Really?
Yeah.
It's
so they changed a little bit as we've gone along. It's been very interesting.
So any unusual things you see in your health?
Yeah, and unfortunately right now it's allergy season.
It is.
So it makes it tough. But if you've been around somebody that you know is positive, then, you know, it's possible and you should be getting checked, tested.
Because I know someone called me and said that they were grateful they got theirs and their kids in the mail. And that, you know, they had used one and it was positive.
Right.
And
have you not got any?
Yeah, I have mine.
Oh, okay, good.
But I want more just to have more.
Yeah.
You can get a second batch now.
Can you?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They gave out four originally.
That answers your question because you had that question.
Yeah. They gave out four per household and they just recently allowed a second request for four more.
Okay, then that's...
That's great. I didn't know that either, Dr. Wright.
That's why you listen to What's the 411 with Sharon.
That's right.
Well, that takes care of us because we know what we're about to do in this place. Well, when she called me and told me, I was like, well, how did you know? Did you go to the drugstore, the drive-thru? She said, no, I had my government kit. And she started feeling bad and stuff, and her son was feeling bad. And kind of... I guess from him.
Yeah.
And just all of a sudden, just started with the scratchy throat thing.
It comes on very quickly.
Yeah. But after a week, was fine.
Yeah. And that's the thing about this variant seems to clear very quickly.
Okay.
Doesn't last as long as some of the prior variants.
Okay. Yeah, I know folks are happy to hear that. Talk about hospitalizations, Dr. Gann.
Right. So the good news is that hospitalizations are down significantly. As our numbers have come down, then obviously hospitalizations have come down. The one thing that was interesting about Omicron is we follow something called a CFR, which is the case fatality rate. So the number of deaths over the number of cases. And even with Omicron, with all the cases we are having, our case fatality rate actually dropped during that time, which means that it wasn't as severe for most people. Now, that part of that reason is we had a lot of people that were vaccinated, and that vaccination protects them. The other thing is that it just seems to be a little bit milder, clears a little quicker. But because we were having large numbers, we did have a fair number of hospitalizations. And generally, the people that did get severe disease were those that were unvaccinated and had significant underlying health issues.
I know our death rate is nowhere near where it was at all. It was very alarming, and I feel like everybody was touched in some way all over the nation. Where are we at there 2 years in?
Right. So 2 years in, our case fatality rate is less than 1%. It's actually 0.77%. So less than one person per 100.
Okay.
That actually gets the disease.
Okay. Were there underlying conditions for them, pre-existing?
Most of them had underlying pre-existing conditions.
Okay.
I just read an article yesterday that there was a 2-year-old child with no known health conditions who died just recently. So it can happen, but it's much less common. If you've been vaccinated, and then, of course, a 2-year-old can't be vaccinated, but if you've been vaccinated, it really significantly reduces that risk.
Now, there was a story in today's news about Moderna, and they're saying their 2-dose pediatric vaccine is safe in young children, toddlers, and babies, and according to this new study.
That's right.
What can you tell us about that, Moderna, and also Pfizer?
Well, Pfizer has gone back to recruiting more people. Their initial dose, it appears, didn't give quite the same immunity in the young children. They cut the dose down.
Mm-hmm.
They found it didn't provide as good immunity. They're going back and increasing their dosing, I think, or changing it. Moderna just came out with their information today. I had saw that also. It now goes to the FDA, CDC to look at and review all that literature and then to make a recommendation. But theoretically, if it is what they're saying, we could have something for young children under age 5 within a month or two.
And how do the numbers look for them, the young ones?
Case numbers, you mean? They're low. They're very low.
So the school children are doing well.
Yes, and the severity of illness there is very, very low.
Good. Because I think it's this week or next week they're going to change the policy there where it's optional to...
It started this past Monday.
Oh, it already started.
Yeah, Metro Nashville Public Schools masks went optional on Monday.
Well, I wondered that.
So we'll still have reports of cases, so we'll be able to see if there's increase there, see that how that may affect anything.
I know that... they make their decisions, but is there like an alarm point that educator or private schools, public schools should have?
Well, so we at the health department continue to follow what we call clusters. We've always reported on clusters, which is a group that has an outbreak together. So we're following the clusters within schools, and we would be involved in letting the school know we're seeing a large number of your people, whether they're staff or students, being sick, and we think, and we talk with schools all the time and help advise them with that.
Well, I hope it all goes well for Metro, because they really have had a struggle, in this last 2 years and dealing with the issues they've had to deal with. But I say we just stay vigilant, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Rachel, talk to the audience and tell them if they're interested in they're getting their either testing. I know at Fisk University, they do random testing.
Oh.
So you get away with nothing if you work here. And
Really? Yes. Random COVID testing?
Yes, ma'am. You get the email, you got to go.
Well, that's definitely a strategy I hadn't heard, but I wish it all the best.
I've had 6 of them, 7 of them, in 2 years.
Yeah, well, I'm sure when it comes up negative, it's a good feeling,
and
right?
They all have.
Yeah, great.
So I've been in the underground tunnel.
And you
tunnel.
Just walk away proud and
yeah,
confident.
I do. I'm like, don't you mess with me.
Yeah.
I've been staying in the house for 2 years. Just now coming out. But it's like, yeah, they did. They just went all the way over the top series.
Mm-hmm.
And we still are completely over the top series on the campus. That's why my student is being obedient today and has his mask at all times. the students particularly have had, complete and total, you got to do this. And XL, put Makai on for 1 second.
because I know that he's from, forgot where you're from. Mekhi, where did you say you were from?
How you all doing? I'm from Jackson, Mississippi.
Mississippi. They had a lot of cases there.
Yeah, a lot
but,
of cases.
But you a student on this campus. What did the university tell you all? Stay in your areas. Don't be wear your mask. What did they tell you?
So when we enter the buildings, we have to wear masks. That's mandatory. And we do have a lot of COVID, random COVID testing. And I'm an athlete, so after we travel, the whole team has to get tested when we go to our destination and come back from our destination. So I've probably had a total of about 15 this year.
Wow.
Oh, okay. So you're used to it.
What's your rank for positive versus negative?
Oh, I'm on undefeated.
All right.
Good answer. Good answer. Oh, so you could be on Miss K's team, right? Yeah.
Win the team.
Yeah. That makes you feel good, though, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Are you glad it's like that?
It is helping us fight against COVID, so I'm glad we're taking a stand against it as a community.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
And what about Mississippi? They need to do what we're doing, right?
Sure. A lot of places do.
Yeah, most definitely. Thank you.
They're slowly, the numbers are slowly decreasing, so that's a good sign.
That's great.
Yeah, it is. We're all happy about it. Okay, now I got the student takes. Not just me, the employee, I got the student. So, you know, 15, I guess I need to shut up with my 7. and that's a lot for the athletes. They're really serious about it.
Absolutely.
And I guess most of the schools are doing that.
I bet. I'm sure.
I actually consulted some with Vanderbilt throughout the last 2 years for their what they were doing with the SEC and their protocols for testing. And so, it's being done.
Okay. Now, Rachel, you gave the locations?
No, I have not.
Do it.
Metro's drive-through clinics are at the former Kmart at 2491 Murfreesboro Pike and at 28th and Charlotte, the intersection of 28th and Charlotte. They're open Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m., two locations.
Okay, and Dr. Gill, people can still call you for information, questions, concerns, correct?
They can. They call the health department.
Okay, what's the best way to keep up with what's going on that you all are doing, any changes? Because I know you change. I see from time to time you all have changes on the
our
times.
Website.
Yeah, okay.
www.asafenashville.org.
Okay.
O-R-G, asafenashville.org. That has all of our testing and vaccination locations.
Yes.
The calendar for our pop-up events can pop-up vaccination testing events are on there.
Yeah.
And just your COVID information.
And our reporting that comes out 3 times a week is on there also.
Excellent. 3 times a week. What days?
It comes out Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Okay, super. All right, everybody, so there you go. 2 years in. The team is still working hard
for you.
And we are very
much appreciate you.
Oh, of course.
Yes, we do. Thank you.
You know, when you got teamwork and saving lives, that's the only reason why we do what we do, y'all. That's it. Other than that, what else is there to do? I feel good about it. We have our good friends from the Metro Health Department in the studio. Rachel Franklin and Dr. Gilwright. I had never seen them in here in years, y'all. I'm saying not even a glimpse. I should have got a cardboard cutout. Next time. But I'm just tickled to death. Matter of fact, I'm going to take the picture. Then I'll fix my cardboard cutout. In case we have to do this again, I'll just say,
no, we don't want to do this.
Right.
No, never again, right? Never. Anyway, thank you both for your time, and I'll be getting back with you all on part 2.
Sounds great.
So we can
we hope to give even better news.
I hope so, too. Excellent. We're going to get an updated traffic report, come back with Keita Hayes. To talk about her book and bending the arc from prison to politics. So we'll hear the story, or Haynes, we'll hear the story and the book and from the lady that wrote it right after we come back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. Finishing up a crash in Madison, 200 block at Gallatin Pike. It's busy. 500 Bell Road there in Antioch, where they're trying to clear up that crash. Heavy traffic developing 65 up by Metro Center here at Rosa Parks. This traffic report brought to you by Prince's Hot Chicken. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Don't miss WFSK's Artist of the Week Thursdays right here on Nashville's Jazz Station. That's where we put the spotlight on new releases. Coming up, we'll put the spotlight on trumpeter Willie Bradley. His latest release is entitled It's My Time. You'll hear from Willie in a live interview and have a chance to win his brand new release. That's WFSK Artist of the Week on Nashville's Jazz Station, Jazzy 88 WFSK. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Sharon Kay rolling into the scene. Literally. All right, we are taking you home Wednesday, the drive into wherever your destination is, and hopefully you can get there. That wind is no joke today in Nashville with this wind advisory that we have in effect. So you all definitely going to have to hold the wheel on your way home this afternoon. Now, today's book is from a Middle Tennessee author. Her name is Keita Haynes. The book is Bending the Arc, From Prison to Politics. And Miss Hayes, how are you today? Hello.
Hello. I am doing well, thank you.
Good, good. When X told me he found you on one of the social media things, and what was it, LinkedIn or X, Facebook or something?
She's everywhere, but I saw on Facebook.
Oh, okay. Well, you're everywhere. I didn't get a copy of the book though, but I know you're in Franklin, so one of these days you'll drop one off for me. Now, are you born and raised Franklin?
Yes, ma'am. Born and raised in Franklin, and a lot of my family is actually still living there now.
Aren't they? Okay, cool. Hopefully they get a chance to listen to you today and hear your interview today. You are sharing your personal experiences in the book and actually an expose. And this story of yours, what has been the reception with people who have been saying prison to politics? What in the world? What's been the thought of people who are hearing about the book and also reading your story?
For the most part, the reviews have been really good. You know, a lot of people said it gives them insight into the criminal legal system that they never had. And, you know, that was one of the main purposes of writing the book, was to kind of pull the veil back on the criminal legal system and to show people what really happens there and to show people the impact of the criminal legal system, so that hopefully, you know, as we are talking about criminal legal reform, that we're not just talking about it just you know, from reading, you know, like numbers in the book or whatever, that we actually have, you know, the knowledge that this is people that will be impacted, you know, by the decisions that we're making. And so, you know, that, again, like I said, that was one of the main purposes within writing the book, was so that people could see the impact of the criminal legal system.
Okay. And as a criminal justice reform advocate and former Nashville public defender, your perspective obviously was quite different, knowing the system the way that you did. And I'm certain in this region, there were some things other regions of the United States people may or may not experience. What was it like in the Nashville area as far as being a public defender and then being on the other side of that?
So, yeah, so I think that the fact that I had actually been to prison myself, number one, it definitely gave me a different and unique perspective coming into the public defense arena, but it also was, it was a very humbling experience for me, because while, you know, I would think that my clients and I would have some things in common, which, you know, we did with having to experience the criminal legal system, but there were a lot of things that we didn't have in common. And so it was a learning experience for me, and it was very humbling. You know, I mentioned it in the book that, you know, it was one of the most humbling jobs, you know, just because I learned so much that I didn't know, and the fact that people trusted me, you know, with their stories and with their lives, you know, that to me, like I said, that's just really humbling. And, you know, I didn't take their trust that they had for me, you know, for granted as I was working as a public defender.
Mm-hmm. Did you, while I'm waiting for this program to open back up with this, some information on your book, what took place? How old were you when all of this happened?
I was in my early 20s.
Okay, wow. Okay. And boyfriend issues?
Well, it was a guy that I had met when my sister and I had went out for her birthday, and I, you know, we were living in Franklin. He was living in Memphis, and said that he was doing an internship here in Nashville. And, you know, and so we exchanged numbers, we talked, you know, and eventually developed, you know, a relationship. And it was in the process of that relationship that he had mentioned that, you know, him and his cousins and some of their friends, that they had Beepers Plus shops in Memphis and in Nashville, and that no one would be at the store here in Nashville to accept the packages when FedEx would drop them off. And that's when he asked if I would be willing, you know, to sign for those packages.
That sounds like the classic story of a lot of black women that went to prison. Did you notice a parallel between your situation and those of other black women in the system?
I mean, there's definitely a parallel of, you know, of women in prison, right? You know, you look at the numbers and, you know, over the last past 10 years, the number of women that have been incarcerated, the number has risen higher than, you know, higher and faster than,
right,
you know, than males, right? But it was interesting in prison to hear, you know, women that were in there because of boyfriends or husbands. But it was also interesting, too, because this was in the height of this fictitious war on drugs. And so, you know, you saw a lot of families that were destroyed because, you know, of this whole tough on crime and war on drugs. And there were, you know, moms that were there, sisters that were there, brothers, cousins. I mean, like, literally entire families that have been, you know, destroyed because of this criminal legal system.
Okay, so you were in your 20s. How old were you when you began your advocacy work and working as a former public defender?
So I think I was probably 27 or 28 when I got out.
Okay.
And And I've been doing that work ever since then.
Okay. And you were more mature at that particular time. I bet you as an advocate, you could really call it like a TIA is, can't you?
that's the plan.
Okay. I'm just saying, okay, let's cut through that one. I know. And now, how was family on this for you? Because, you know, you're certain a good Southern church girl and, you know, blah, 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 and raised in a good family and all. And I'm sure your family was like, you know, help me, Jesus. Do you share that information in the book?
I do talk about my family in the book, in different aspects along the way, because my family was extremely supportive and, you know, like going through the process when I was in prison, and particularly, you know, during the reentry process when I came home. And, you know, and I recognize that, especially working at the public defender's office, like I said, it's one of the things is that everybody doesn't have that same family support, you know, and especially not the level of family support that I had. And that was one of the things that I talk about, in the book. I talk about, we have to create this second chance culture, right? And so for people that don't have that level of support from families, it is up to us in the community to be able to provide that in order so that people really can, have a successful reentry and make a successful transition back into the community.
Well, I would certainly say that had to be very, very helpful, because there truly are a lot of women whose families have turned their back on them. What was it like for the climate in Franklin in particular? I see the politics are different there, things are different there. What was it like during the time that you were dealing with the system?
Yeah, so Franklin is different now than it was, years ago. Growing up there and living there is, I think it's a completely different experience than people who have been moving into Williamson County over the last past 10, 15 years, right? And so being from Franklin, being, born and raised there, all of my family was there, went to church there. Everybody knows everybody. And so the community was really supportive. My church community was really supportive. And they still are to this day. When we did a book release there back in December, so many of all of the women and stuff from the church were there and would constantly ask my mom and my grandmother, like, how I was doing. And so for them to, still to continue to support me on this journey, coming to buy the books and wanting to get their signed and to take a picture with me, mm-hmm. That meant a lot. Mm-hmm.
Oh, definitely. Why did you feel the need to write a book, obviously, and then decide to propel yourself into politics? Because you already knew folks was going to have something to say on the other side of the aisle. I know you knew that.
Well, but the thing is that I look back and I look at how everything happened with my case, how there were 29 of us and I was the only person that stood up against the government, right? And so not even knowing that was like that God was preparing me to be the only one sometimes in situations to stand up against what's right. And so it was never really a question about, whether I was going to do this. I saw that there was a need and felt that I was in a position to be able to, run for Congress, go to Congress, and do something about it in order to help meet this need. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. And actually, there were a lot of people that reached out, like from all across, the country, people that have been in prison and jails who wanted to get their voting rights back. And so it really sparked this whole movement of people saying, I want to vote, because when there's someone that is running for an office that I feel that is going to represent me in my community, that's going to be the best person in this position, I want to make sure that I'm able to vote for them.
Excellent. And whether you would have gone through this or not, would you have wanted to still be an advocate and also a part of the legal system?
Well, I mean, I always said that I was going to be a lawyer.
Okay.
And knew that I wanted to do criminal defense work. But without everything that I had been through, of course, I definitely would not have the perspective that I have now with having been on the other side of you know, the criminal legal system as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think without that perspective, I'm not sure that I would have had the same drive that I have now, you know, to see change.
Hmm. Why is that? What do you cite as the factor?
Because it's personal now.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, so when I am talking about voting rights now, like, I'm talking about the fact that in 2008, when Obama first ran for president and the whole country was celebrating the fact that we had just elected our first black president, I couldn't be a part of that because I didn't have my voting rights back then.
Wow.
So, you know, so I know what it's like, you know what I'm saying, to be a shadow citizen, to be, you know, in your community working and paying bills and, you know, in taxes and doing everything that you're supposed to do, but still being on the outside of that community because you are not able to use the vote to make your voice heard.
Yeah.
So I know what that is. You know, when we're talking about, you know, sentencing reform, like, I know what that is. So that's why I say, like, these things are personal now to me, versus had I not went through it. Like, I, you know, still would have been an advocate because these are issues that I care about. But like I said, they're personal now.
Oh, most definitely. Now, talk about in the remaining moment, where in the book do you start talking about the desire for politics? For you?
So the book really, like, just kind of like follows through my entire life. And so, you know, it's kind of towards the middle, towards the end, because that's where the book, you know, kind of ends at. And so, yeah, so I talk about wanting to do that, but it was after being at the public defender's office for 6.5 years and realizing that there was so much more that was happening in my clients' lives by the time they had got to me in the criminal legal system, and just wanting to, you know, to do something about those issues.
Do you think when you announced that people took it seriously, your candidacy?
I mean, no, I don't, because people didn't know who I was, right? And so it was just like, you know, who is this, you know, former, because, I mean, well, let me say, if you had been part of the criminal legal system, if you had come into that courthouse in any shape, form, or fashion, if you had done any type of community advocacy work, then you knew who I was. But the larger population of Nashville did not know who I was, right? So, you know, it was introducing myself to the larger population of Nashville.
Okay, because I'm trying to say, I don't know if I know you, except you everywhere. I'm like, there's some places she's not. And that's for sure. And tell us now about, and I'm just about out of time, but do you have still continue to have plans for politics?
Well, you know, it just depends. I mean, because I never originally had plans initially. It was just, I felt like that was the continuation of the work, of the advocacy work that I had been doing, right? Because working as a public defender, you may make change one person at a time, right? Depending on the judge, the DA, or whatever. But I just felt like that our issues were so big and so many people were impacted that I wanted to be in a position where I could change policy that's going to impact, you know, large groups of people at a time and not just one person at a time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we'll see. I mean, like, you know, I feel like I'm on an exciting journey, you know, letting God lead me as to where you know, he feels that I should be going and where I would be best suited. And, you know, and I'm aligning, you know, my life and my purpose with him.
Yeah. Well, let us know. Mm-hmm. Let us know now. We don't want to find you on social media, baby. You know, sometimes I ain't got time. Let us know.
And, definitely. Yeah,
most assuredly. And Keita Haynes, she's the author of Bending the Arc, From Prison to Politics. And Keita, I'm certain that a lot of ladies in the system or those with family members in the system would be interested in probably reading the book and finding out more about how you made it through. I know you have on your social. What's the best way to do it?
So interestingly enough, we are actually working with the women's prison here for us to be able to go out to the women's prison and to talk to them about the book and those very things that you mentioned, and actually and to be able to give the women, you know, books there. We have something set up to go into the jails in Murfreesboro to talk to the women as well, too. So because for me that's important is that, you know, I want to make sure that, that I am giving back, right, and that I am giving to a population of people that normally are left behind and locked out, right? And so that is one of the things that we're doing. But, you know, people can reach out to me. My website is just my first and last name, KeitaHaynes.com. And my email is KeitaHaynes1@gmail.com.
Excellent. Keita, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate that and hearing your story. And I have a heart for the advocates out there, that the tireless workers that are always looking out for their fellow man and fellow woman. So thank you so much, and I hope that you have a good rest of the day.
You too. Thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
That's the author of Bending the Arc, From Prison to Politics, Franklin Born and Raised, Keita Haynes. Now we're going to get this news right quick, come back on the other side. I'm going to hear from Brittany Smith. She's from the cast of the Donna Summer musical this week at TPAC. If you're a Donna Summer fan, you're going to want to hear this is the Diva Donna. Brittany plays the Diva Donna. And we'll hear about that in the 5 o'clock hour. Let's take a time out and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.